Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company here on a Thursday, Findlay Toyota Studios. Special day here at Lotus Broadcasting. We did our holiday shindig. Willie is here, Willie Ramirez. James is running the show. A lot to get to, NFL, college football, big UNLV content hour. In the 5 o'clock hour, we'll talk to both Chief Borders, edge rusher for the Rebels as they get ready to leave tomorrow for the Frisco Bowl, which is played on Tuesday, and also conversation questions with Josh Pastner from the Josh Pastner radio show last night. If you missed that, we got some good stuff where I was asking him directly about some of the issues with Rebel basketball as they're out to a 4-6 start. Willie, what's going on, buddy?
I was a winner today at the big holiday shindig.
That's cool.
Yeah. Huh? I didn't even know that was a thing.
We used to do that all the time. We used to have a weekly lunch here and kind of cut that out years ago. Not saying anything bad about it, but they're very generous here at Lowe's Broadcasting. So end of the year holiday gifts. You get something good?
I did. I didn't even realize. I actually thought it was just a Bluetooth speaker. They said, you're getting a echo sound, something. And
wow.
So I handed it off. And then Danny was telling me, he said, no, that's the... I said, but it says Alexa on the box. Does that mean that I have to subscribe to that Alexa thing? I have no clue. I don't like... To me, if you're talking to someone in your house to turn something on, switch something on, for me, that means that somebody's listening.
Yeah.
It's bad enough that I'm pretty sure that Uncle Sam's listening through our phone and whatever the case may be. But the fact of the matter is, I didn't know what, I just didn't know. Ignorant to it on purpose that I've never known, like, what Alexa, hey, Alexa, do this. I thought you had to subscribe to something. Daniel was like, no, it's all built into the speaker. So once you go in, you hook it up to your Wi-Fi, all the apps are in there, and you just tell it to do whatever it is that you want to do, and it does it within. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you got a gift. That's awesome. I want to get to some NFL coming up. UNLV football, actually, via the Mountain West Conference, all the Mountain West Conference football schools are releasing what they're going to do home and road next year in terms of schedule. It's a little jarring when you look at it because the graphic is up at UNLV football on Twitter, and you're like, okay, the Disloyal Five are, this is kind of the official, they're gone. So here's what UNLV fans have to look forward to with home and road. This is just conference. Just conference. Non-con can always change. Non-conference has a game here against Cal, at North Texas, and I believe at Akron. And they've got one more spot to fill, which could be a big banger. We'll see what that is. I know they've been working on some really fantastic things. A home slate for UNLV football next year will be Northern Illinois. Okay. If I'm on the beat again as the sideline reporter, I was kind of curious about what DeKalb, Illinois, or DeKalb, Illinois is like. It's like 40 miles west of Chicago.
Wait, you never been there?
Never been there.
Okay, I got a place that you have to go. We'll discuss it.
I have to go, though.
But the game
is here this year.
Oh, well, there's a must place. Wallington will tell you about it. It's a
really?
Because they used to be in the Big West together, Northern Illinois and UNLV,
okay,
back in the day. But it's the stop. It's a pizza joint in DeKalb. People go into Chicago, they'll drive up to DeKalb just to go to this pizza place.
Damn. So home games include Northern Illinois, Wyoming, Reno, and UTEP. Road tilts at Hawaii, at Air Force, at New Mexico, at San Jose State. If Jason Eck does what he did in the transfer portal this past year, then New Mexico should be damn good. I expect Hawaii to be really good, as long as nothing happens with any transfer of hometown hero here, Micah Alejado, who's going into his redshirt sophomore year.
Yep.
So good road slate, interesting home slate, and it also suggests when you read the schools that this will be a developing football conference. They need to be really aggressive in the non-con because we're going to play out the theme on multiple fronts today and tomorrow and Saturday, by the way, on Throw the Flag, which is our college football and college basketball and kind of NFL show. I started into this yesterday. The war against the Group of Five has begun, and it's coming from all different voices of Power Four connected people saying that, hey, this Group of Five thing, you know, JMU and Tulane being in the playoffs, this ain't right. We got to fix this. Nick Saban called it AAA. Why would you let AAA in to the playoff? I don't like that.
No, and
I don't like Nick Saban right now.
And the fact that in terms of being aggressive, when you say that, I think it's inevitable in that because of the college football playoff, because of the talk of expanding the bracket, because of how the way that the conference realignments went, what, a year and a half ago, and things broke off, right? And the way the Pac-12 was sort of abandoned into two teams, and now they'll rebuild with however you want to call it. But people, I think that both the new Pac-12 and the Mountain West will be aggressive toward the group of fives that are considered to be right there among the best of the best, because I think, like you're saying, they're calling all of them AAA. But I think that you're going to see the aggressive. And not only that, but as we've been discussing for the past however many months, 18 months, NIL is going to strengthen the power ratings of these teams, because you're going to be able to get some of those players, not maybe the top five, the blue chips, but the guys that are feeling slighted, where they know that they can go and shine and get paid.
You see it that way. The bigwigs either don't see it that way or are lying. So I think talent is being spread out more than it's ever been. I don't think the big squads have the depth they used to have, but I'll keep beating that drum. I mean, I don't know. I talked to two guys today for UNLV and Chief Borders and Day-Day Reynolds. Reynolds, a wide receiver, played at Florida and Pitt. And Borders played at Florida, Pitt, and Nebraska. So they certainly know both levels. And when I threw them the question today about, because there was a college football content creator who said group of five should not be playing power four because, you know, there could be a safety issue. And I said that to both of them, and they were like, okay. You know, Day-Day's like 6'1 and 210 wide receiver, and you know, Chief Borders is 6'5 and 250. It's this whole case mounting because they're annoyed that their system didn't work out where you get to exclude most of the schools. And JMU found a loophole because the ACC had bad tiebreakers and they had a balanced conference. They didn't have none of their power schools won it. Clemson and Florida State were down, and Miami somehow found its way out of the tiebreaker, didn't make the ACC title game, but still made the playoff.
What's the safety issue?
Oh, just the size of the players, which is absurd.
Have you seen some of the boys on the line in Hawaii?
I'll say this. I'm going to say this 4 days in a row. The size of power four players many times only describes what they look like in terms of appearance. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily better football players across the board. And anyone who's played high school football who might have been like an undersized linebacker, you know, a 5'11 linebacker or a 5'9 receiver or a quarterback who goes 6 foot tall or a lineman who is 6'2 and 300, not 6'6 and 300. It's all about measurables, a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And there's talent. There's, you know, there's speed. There's another level oftentimes with guys who are at the highest level. But to me, it's about playing time. And I think you have more quarterbacks who are spread all over the place. So we'll get into that story a little more later on as I ask Chief Borders in a conversation earlier today about that. Myles Garrett certainly is a power five, power four, whatever you want to call it, looking dude. He played at a high level. He's a monster. He's had a monster season. Without an obvious choice now, because Drake May was leading the pack, and now Matt Stafford is the favorite, could a defensive player actually get the MVP on a bad team?
I think that's going to be the only knock is you didn't lead, but, you know, lead the team. But if there's a guy that I would say that deserves it, that should be in the running or be considered, it's Myles Garrett.
He's going to finish the year probably with 25 or 26 sacks.
Yeah, he leads the league right now, 21.5 sacks, ranks first in the NFL, 124 since entering the league in 2017. The second most by a player in his first nine seasons. They play against Buffalo. And I think that the caliber of play, the caliber of competition drives a guy like that, right? Because Cleveland has nothing to play for. But for a guy like that, you're driven to want to drive, you know, a fellow MVP candidate, if you will, and someone who's regarded as, by in some circles, the best quarterback in the NFL, not my circle. But he can also – there are milestones for this guy. I mean, he can surpass Michael Strahan and T.J. Watt for the most sacks in a season since 1982, when the individual sack became an official statistic. I was talking to someone here in the building after lunch today about are the biggest Cleveland Brown fan you know in this building. Mm-hmm. And we both were talking about the fact that he's in the same situation as Max Crosby, where there you have two fledgling franchises that should do right by those guys. Well, Miles wants out. Max says he wants to stay, and he's loyal. But, you know, they're sizable pieces that can bring in top draft pick and possibly an offensive lineman. You can get a first rounder and an O-lineman when both of those franchise problems are offensive line. So, I mean, Myles Garrett, if there's a guy out there that deserves to be in the conversation for overall MVP, winning or losing team, it's Myles Garrett.
Coming up next, let's get back into that college football playoff narrative, the big versus the small, the Miami and Texas A&M, a lot of trash talk going on by the Texas A&M side. We'll talk to college football insider Stephen Hartzell.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on here on a Thursday edition. Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Let's get into the college football playoff. And, you know, I'm very big on talking about Tulane and JMU being in this thing because, you know, we are, according to Nick Saban, a AAA city. Las Vegas is a, you know, we're
AAA.
Small city. It's AAA down
here. We're still minor league.
AAA down here in the group of five. It's really irking me, and God almighty, I hope both of these schools, JMU and Tulane, play competitive games, if not pull off the upset. Stephen Hartzell covers college football for Learfield. He's up with Willie and Cofield. Stephen, how are you, buddy?
Steve, good to be with you, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, we'll tell the audience you have a particular tie that's important to this whole thing in that you are actually a JMU guy, so I'll ask you straight out, does JMU, and you can be objective, JMU deserve to be in the college football playoff?
So you asked a very specific question. Do they deserve to be in the playoff? Yes, because we have rules. There are regulations. There's a system. Who gets in and who doesn't? Don't blame JMU for going 12-1 and winning the Sun Belt. Like, if you want to talk about the ACC tiebreakers, fine. Like, I'm open to that. Okay, they chose to have Duke and Virginia play in Charlotte in front of, like, I don't know, maybe 20,000 people or whatever it was. I mean, it was a sad scene at Bank of America Stadium. JMU did nothing wrong. So do they deserve to be in the CFP? Yes. Now, to your earlier point about the two group of five teams, Tulane and JMU, being on this stage on Saturday back-to-back, does that give me concern? Yeah, because I think there are a lot of people who are hoping that both Tulane and JMU end up like a bug on a windshield so that they can point to, hey, you shouldn't be here. Notre Dame needs to be here. BYU should be here instead. Like, this is – they're hoping that these teams get steamrolled so that they can revise and change the system that they put in place. Like, you're getting me fired up, Steve. Like, I'll be honest, man. Like, I've been hearing this for weeks because – people want to bang on the little guy. The little guy didn't do anything wrong. These are conference commissioners. These are the most powerful people in sports who got together and said, you know what? Five highest-ranked conference champs get in. And this was after we revised the format when we went to 12 a year ago, where the conference champs actually got byes. Like, can you imagine if, like, Tulane or JMU was actually a top-four seed in this thing? Because that's what happened last year.
Yep.
So, you know, be careful what you wish for. I understand that this thing is still in the works for 2026, which, you know, just to remind people out there listening, we don't know what the CFP is going to look like in 2026. Is it going to be 12? Is it going to be 16? Is it going to be automatic bids? Like, we don't have a formula. We haven't agreed on that yet. So don't blame JMU for going 12-1 and handling their business.
Stephen Hartzell.
Now,
go ahead.
Sorry, I just... whether or not it's going to be a competitive game against Oregon, that is a different story. That's a separate conversation.
Well, that ties in with what I was going to ask you. Stephen Hartzell joining us, Learfield's College Sports Now up on Cofield and Company. How far does a team need to go to prove that it belongs? Because there are going to be Power Five teams that bow out in their first game or in the second game. They're going to get teams that are going to be embarrassed. So if one team gets embarrassed and James Madison or Tulane gets embarrassed, you can't. I mean, that's just the way it is. How far does that team have to go to prove it did belong there?
if you're asking me, I think all they need to do is make this thing a competitive game into the third or fourth quarter. Like, I understand. You guys are in Vegas. You know what the point spreads are. Tulane is a 17-point dog on the road in a true road game at Ole Miss. JMU is a 3-touchdown dog in a true road game in one of the toughest environments in college football. So, like, I'm not looking for moral victories personally, but I heard this argument, you know, coming back from conference championship weekend. You know, they played those games on Saturday. We knew what happened in the ACC championship game. And then Sunday morning, we have the CFP selection show. We knew what we were going to be getting, right? It was going to come down to who's 9, who's 10. We know who's 11. We know who's going to be 12. All I heard these talking heads, you know, going on and on about on Sunday morning was, well, what if we get a blowout? Wouldn't that stink for the sport? Well, guess what? We got a blowout in the Big 12 championship game. Okay, Texas Tech smoked BYU. I mean, exactly. That thing was what, 31-7, and BYU led 7-0, so 31 unanswered for Texas Tech. Guess what? We had a blowout in the SEC championship game, 28-7. Like, how big of a difference is it whether it's 28-7, 35-7? We had blowouts in two Power Four conference championship games. Okay, so now you're gonna point to Tulane, you're gonna point to JMU. If they lose by 2 scores, if they lose by 3 scores, this is the system that you guys created, okay? So don't blame Tulane. Don't blame JMU for being here. I actually think, and yes, Steve, you mentioned, I am a JMU alum, okay? So, like, I'm feeling things that I didn't think I'd ever be feeling, right? Because, like, JMU, like, magic carpet ride to be here, all that stuff, okay? I do think there is a path. Like, I'm not going to come on here in Las Vegas and convince you, like, hey, JMU is going to win straight up at Oregon. There is a path for JMU to win. They need turnover luck. They need Oregon to go, like, 1 of 8 on fourth down conversions. Like, there are things that they need to happen. They need to dominate time of possession. They need to drag this game to hell, like the Oregon-Iowa game or the Oregon-Wisconsin game. Weather's going to be a factor in Eugene. It's going to be raining all week. It's going to be raining on Saturday night. There are things in JMU's favor. But look, if it's 14-0 Ducks in the first quarter, we're done. Like, we are cooked. Like, there's no, hey, there's a, you know, let's play from behind, let's chase points type of thing. But, you know, there's a lot of people out here, and I've been hearing this for the last 2 weeks, like, you know, Cinderella doesn't deserve to be in the college football playoff. And I philosophically, guys, I have a problem with that because I love college sports. And you could say, well, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson and UMBC in the college basketball tournament, that doesn't apply because that's a different sport. We're talking about football here. We're talking about a talent acquisition business, right? College football. It's all about paying for the best players, having the best roster, splashing the cash so that you can win a national championship a la Ohio State last year, right? Spending 20, 25 mil on a payroll to get it done. I think if you have that mindset, if you have that mentality and you can't appreciate what Tulane and JMU are going into on Saturday, then we're just, you know, that you're watching sports differently than me. That's all I'm saying. So we'll see how it plays out. But I think there are two very different factions of college football fans going into this weekend. And there's a lot of people, Steve, who feel like, hey, I want Tulane and JMU to get smoked so that we can prove our point.
How does Tulane knock off Ole Miss?
Luck. I mean, look, the anatomy for an upset for any of these teams, these group of five teams, is you need turnover luck. Like, you need Trinidad Chambliss to fumble in the red zone when they're looking to go up 2 scores. Like you need things to happen. And look, football, like, these things can happen. Like, it's not unheard of. Look, I don't know how many of your people keep up with the FCS playoffs, okay? There's a team in the semifinals, Illinois State, okay? Yep. Shout out to the Redbirds. Yep. They went on the road. They beat North Dakota State on the road as a 24.5-point underdog. Mm-hmm. Like, don't tell me that it can't happen, okay? It does happen, and it happens pretty often. We've just never seen it happen in the 12-team CFP. Trinidad Chambliss for Ole Miss, like, when these two teams hooked up in the regular season, 45-10. Now, it was a lopsided score. Jake Retzlaff did nothing. Tulane did nothing. I think both Tulane and JMU, guys, I think these are teams that are playing loose. Like, both coaching staffs are on their way out the door. Summerall's headed to Florida. Chesney's headed to UCLA. Like, I think there's less pressure for these teams who have already accomplished so much this year. Like, it is an accomplishment. Like, I mentioned the moral victories earlier. Like, it's a big deal for Tulane to be here. It's a big deal for JMU to be here. They have nothing to prove. I would argue they've already proved everything. Now, Oregon and Ole Miss, on the other hand, playing in front of their home fans, if they don't handle their business early, if it's a one-score game going into the second half, do they start to tighten up a little bit? I think Ole Miss has a lot more questions than Oregon does because of all the coaching stuff that's been going on. Just so many things around that program that, like, I think those players are – I think they want to prove a point to Lane Kiffin. I really do. Like, I don't think they're in the locker room being like, oh, man, our coach left. I'm really doubting my abilities as a college football player. Our coach said that we can't win a national championship, so I believe him. Our former coach, who's now down in Baton Rouge. Like, I don't buy that at all. But I do think there's something to be said if you're the little guy, if you're JMU, if you're Tulane, if you can hang around, if you can absorb a couple of punches early on in this game, and who knows, in the second half, like, you're hanging around, you're on the roads, teams get tight. We see this all the time. It's college football. Guys make mistakes. It's not the pros. So I think Tulane and JMU both have a shot, but they need a lot of things to go their way early.
We have a minute left. Stephen Hartzell's with us from Learfield. You did sidelines for the SEC title game. Can that Alabama team get off the deck and beat Oklahoma?
I like Oklahoma. Now, I think it's a coin flip game. Oklahoma's offense is so bad, but their defense is so good.
Yeah.
And they've got the best kicker in college football. I think that matters when you're talking about a game where it's essentially a pick 'em. It's in Norman. Like, for me, I like Oklahoma in that spot. I thought Alabama looked so bad against Georgia. And I'm hearing rumors about, you know, just what's going on with the quarterback and the health situation. So give me Oklahoma in that one. Guys, I'll be honest, I don't think it's going to matter because whoever wins that game has to go to the Rose Bowl, and they're going to get blasted by Indiana,
really? Right?
Like, I believe in IU. I am all in on the Hoosiers. Those guys are a wagon. So I don't think it matters, but if you're asking me in a coin flip game, Boomer Sooner.
Steven, love what you do. We got to get you on for more time in the future. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.
There he is. Stephen Hartzell from Learfield, College Sports Now, sideline reporter all over college football. We'll get him on down the road. So, boy, I didn't expect that at the end, that Indiana will crush the winner of this game. Not so sure of that. I'm not completely sold on Alabama, even though they've had a very good season. We disagree on that one. Coming up in 10 minutes, we're going to get out to Chicago. More stadium negotiating, or is this real that the Bears could actually bolt the state of Illinois and head to Gary, Indiana?
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
ESPN Las Vegas, Aaron Thursday, Willie Cofield. Driving around the city a lot lately. You know, with the holidays here, a lot more responsibilities, first world problems, right? Got to go get gifts. So thankful that I have the money to get gifts, but hitting some different areas of the city. I don't want to go on a traffic rant, but boy, it's a mess out there. I will say some of the new construction they've done, I've been fortunate enough to find some different routes. So some of the road fixes they did, not a bad job. But this is a city that's in flux all the time. The urban sprawl is amazing. Like when, I think I was out north a couple of weeks ago taking the 215 out, you know, the north part of the city. And I'm like, my God, there's so much sprouting up out there. Is the sprawl done? Because technically Henderson owns property like all the way down to Prim. They annexed that whole area. There's still plenty of room in the north. I know there was a story in the local paper about the sprawl may stop and we may start building up.
Yeah, I've wondered for about basically since the first time I moved out to the Northwest, because I was always Southwest, lived in Henderson a couple of years, but Southwest for me when we moved back to Vegas and the West started building, when that would happen and if it would happen. You know, when Centennial Hills was built up, you look over the valley. I mean, there are areas up in the Northwest where you could park along the 215 and they watch the New Year's fireworks from up there. And I've always wondered, when will the town start being built vertical? Mm-hmm. Because there's only so far they can go at this point. At this point, you're you know, you hear about what's one of the biggest complaints about way out there? The coyotes. Well, you're going into their backyard. There's only so far you can go at this point. You're hitting mountain. So, and it's a little bit of a scary thought, too, because all of a sudden, the bright lights are dimmed, and you're just looking at buildings, and all of a sudden, it's like you're looking at New York or L.A. I mean, we got a long way to get there, but I don't know. I think we're headed that direction, but, I mean, I don't know if it'll be in our lifetime, but in the next 15, 20 years, it could build vertical, start, you know, okay, and be substantial. But down the road, well down the road, this town could
I'd have
be
zero
skyscrapers.
I'm living in a high-rise. I don't, you know, Arash, our buddy Arash, lives in one of those high-rises. I don't know how he does it. No interest to me. I didn't like it growing up in the Northeast. Not that I lived in a high-rise, but was in them. Had a girlfriend who lived then. Wasn't even a high rise. Maybe she lived on like the sixth floor in New York City on whatever it was, 92nd and Lex. Like, this sucks.
Yeah, Jordan did it for about 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm too much of a hoarder, so I need room to collect all my crap. I guess I might have had to. Maybe it'd be a good thing. I'd just get rid of all of it. So much good stuff, though.
You wouldn't.
So much good stuff.
You wouldn't.
I don't know what I would do.
That 79 Dickey Thon baseball card.
Exactly. How'd you know? Xavier Pope is up next. Oh, man, I saw that Victor Wembanyama lost his grandmother. We're going to react to that.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company, this part of the show, is brought to you by our friends at Westgate Las Vegas. Remember, we've got Saturday and Sunday shows with our weekday host on all these stations at the LV Sports Network and Fox Sports Las Vegas and ESPN Las Vegas and Raider Nation Radio and 1230 Visa in the Game. At Westgate, JVT does his Saturday football preview show. That's at 8 a.m. That show features John Murray, boss of the book at Superbook. And then on Sunday, I am there, or someone from Cofield & Company has been there on the regular. That goes at 8 o'clock, and we've got the Sunday football preview show. And remember, tonight at Westgate for Thursday Night Football, and the same thing for Monday Night Football, discounts on the booths and the VIP. Well, they're VIP booths and pods, a little different size, but they're both unbelievable viewing experiences with the 4K video wall in the Superbook. You have a server, and hell, if you want to get up and walk over, I'm sure the server could get it for you, but, you know, for this price, go walk and get it, right? Dollar drafts and $2 hot dogs on Monday and Thursday. So Thursday Night Football, excellent game tonight with the Rams and the Seahawks. By the way, did the Rams have some travel woes getting up to Seattle?
I saw
they arrive a little bit late?
That's what I saw. I saw that last second, but, yeah, it looks like they arrived late yesterday. The flights were delayed. I don't know how much it's going to have an impact when you're flying charters, but you want to get in, you want to get settled. Sure, want to get that altitude pressure out of your ankles and whatnot. I know that I've talked to a couple of performance that with the companies when they come to for the NBA Summer League, and they talk about that's why they give their compressions and their sleeves for teams that travel. So they give them out to try to get them to endorse their products, but nevertheless. I don't know how much it's – I don't necessarily think it's going to make that big of a difference. If it was game day and they were delayed in getting in, it's one thing, but
– They got there at midnight last night, 11:48, so it'll be okay.
They'll be fine.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. UNLV football, and we'll talk to Chief Borders in the 5 o'clock hour. He's one of their edge rushers, super senior who's in from Nebraska, Pitt, and Florida. Had a very solid year as one of the leaders of the defense, definitely a vocal leader of the defense. UNLV football is going to leave tomorrow. So the bowl experience is a little bit different than a pro football game. You're going to go for a few days. There's some festivities, tours, parties. I don't know about parties, but, you know, events.
Events.
We'll say that.
Bowl
so,
week.
Frisco Bowl, sure. North of Dallas. Should be cool. The game is on Tuesday. And
when do you leave?
We'll have – I'm not going to go. I get there on Monday morning. So got to do the Westgate show. Got to do Throw the Flag. Have to do not a bad thing, right? Busy guy. Have to do UNLV basketball because we've got a double broadcast because that game against Fresno, the opener of the Mount West Conference, is on Silver State Sports and Entertainment Network. So Matt and Everett and Curtis Terry will be doing TV, and then Tim Neverett and myself will be doing the radio call. So wanted to stay for the weekend, get things done, right? Why not? So they're playing an Ohio team on Tuesday that will be without its head coach in Brian Smith. Problem started back on December 1st, but well before that, Brian Smith was, at the time he wasn't relieved of his duties. He was put on leave, and the DC took over as interim coach. And then we found out a couple days ago that the Ohio coach, after 1 year of going 8-4 and getting a chance to finish things out in a bowl game, will not be coaching. He was fired. Now, I think there's a lot of good legal questions in this whole thing, and we bring in Xavier Pope, attorney in Chicago, with Willie and Cofield. EP, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, Steve? And Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, Happy Kwanzaa, all the holidays to you, and Happy New Year to all the ESPN Las Vegas family, those that are in the audience and those that are working there. Love all y'all. Appreciate all y'all for 2025 and this.
Beautiful. We appreciate that. The situation at Ohio has some similarities in terms of what's being called affairs with this Brian Smith, the head coach at Ohio. I don't know how much you had a chance to read into it, but the initial reports came out and said, hey, the guy was drinking on the job. He had drinks with people in his office, so we've let go of him. Now, it turns out, as they're calling it, he was having an extramarital affair or affairs, and it turned out to be one of them with an undergrad. What's the legality of moving on from a football coach over extramarital affairs?
Undergrad and underage are two different things.
Yes.
One is legal, one is not. And I think that's the difference between the Sharon Moore situation over at Michigan in terms of threatening to kill himself and blaming her for it and being charged with terroristic threats and as opposed to fraternizing with a student and then having alcohol on the job and violating policy. So violating policy isn't violating the law, but it could potentially be violating the contract that he signed with Ohio, and that's why they fired him for cause. And I think that's the big difference. And you have a criminal case, you have not just some of the different things you've done in one school, is another where you're just violating policy. This sounds funny, Steve. This is like run-of-the-mill drama, terrible stuff that happens in universities as opposed to something that happened last week.
His attorney responded and said, Coach Smith did not participate in an extramarital affair, and you know it. The coach and his wife had been separated since earlier this year. The two finalized the divorce earlier this month. Coach Smith did not hide the relationship. Even now, his ex-wife didn't accuse him of engaging in extramarital affair. So does he have some legal standing here?
Yeah, I think that they definitely have in terms of what they view. Who is the school to say that you had an extramarital affair? Yep. And if they know, what does that have to do with anything?
Right.
the affairs clause? But on top of that is, if they're doing this in a way that damages his reputation and ability to get a job, what type of rights he may have in terms of some sort of defamation that the school may have by saying that he did something knowing that was not absolutely not the case, knowing the circumstances of what he had going on in his private life.
Agreed. The only thing I could think of is if by doing, they could look at it like a morality clause, right? Like, well, you're running around on your wife. But my question to you, Xavier, is when you are still married, but you're separated. If you're not legally separated, because you can have paperwork. I know before I got a divorce, I was legally separated in the court system and then eventually got a divorce. If you're not legally separated, does the wife have say, no, it's adultery because we're not legally separated. We're not together, but we're not legally separated.
But the process to get legally separated, though, is showing that you have taken steps to be able to be legally separated. It is like, oh, I'm just filing for legal separation one day. And then that's that. You have to be able to show
right.
the amount of time you maybe lived apart, maybe some separation of finances. So there are other ways to show that you're not with this person and intending to separate them than just the formal filing of separation, because that's also a different designation than a dissolution of marriage, which is divorce. And so
right.
how that's looked at in terms of the morality clause, now that starts to take the line a little bit further again, saying that, oh, you just cheated on your wife and committed adultery.
EP is with us. All right, closer to home in Chicago, is Kevin Warren, the president of the Bears, villain number one? What's the latest deal here? Is they can't get this public help. Now they're talking about expanding efforts to go look at sites in Indiana.
Yeah, this is a game that professional sports teams have played with municipalities for decades, Steve. And I said this before in the program. I said that it will be. I know that it looks like it's done. It's Arlington Heights, but we've seen the White Sox do that with the city. They wind up staying in the city. This is the one of the Detroit will get at me hard. Major cities that have all their teams in the city limits. It just puts a lot of pressure on the Bears and what it does to the city to say, I'm the guy. We're the regime that moved the Bears out of Chicago. That's just a really horrible look. And it comes at a really, really terrible time when the franchise on the upswing in terms of its talent, how it's viewed in the National Football League, and its potential for being a championship-caliber team in the future.
Do you think that Chicago should spend public money or at least a good amount on the stadium?
I would never say that out loud, Steve, and because I think it really depends on how you view that as a fan. I'm not a fan of the Chicago Bears. I'm a citizen who lives here. So I'm also not an owner in that team. And so I'm always going to have the position is that I think that the teams are bilking their fans, but the fans are exchanging their cultural and civic pride for being connected to professional sports team. And so that's an exchange that fans and teams make in different cities. So it depends on the hunger. And sometimes that breaks down to the politics. When Brandon Johnson is the current mayor, it would really make his standing strong in the city if he did potentially find a way, whether it's public finance or whether it's a mixed finance, in terms of keeping the Bears in the city. But the issue with that is how some people who live here who may view that decision as a whole. It's a really complicated way, especially with older cities like Chicago that's kept their teams here for forever since.
Gary, Indiana, would that be a good idea? I hear the. Would that be a good idea to spend public money in Gary, Indiana, to maybe class up a blighted area with the Bears? And by the way, anyone out there, because no one does this, how about look up where all these places are on the map? Naperville's 33 miles from Chicago. Gary's actually 30 miles from Chicago. Now, I understand going to Indiana would feel weird, but it is actually only 30 miles from Chicago.
I'm sorry, it's in Indiana. New York City, you have your two football teams in New Jersey.
New Jersey Jets and New Jersey Giants.
Yeah, that does not. We in Chicago, we made fun of that for years. And having a team in Indiana of all places, they have a whole different time zone. When you drive a little bit further than Chicago, and so for Chicago to say we want a team in Indiana, it's actually a joke, and I think it offended a lot of people here. But I think that when it comes down to it, a place like Indiana is a blighted city. An industry took there. It looks like someone dropped a bomb there. It's really. Has suffered significantly, but I don't think the Chicago Bears is the answer or solution to that problem.
Let's talk a little football on the field. I saw that you reposted a video on Threads. Xavier's got an excellent Threads account at Xavier Pope with Kirk Cousins talking about modern day QBing and the challenges of what defenses throw at you.
Yeah, I mean, it was an excellent breakdown in describing the decision that he's had to make up to the last 5 years in terms of separating one half of the field and then making his progressions from there in terms of determining whether it's a split or a single high safety. And he really broke it down in a lot of football language for people who understand football, love to hear this type of stuff. And then talked about now in terms of automatically going through progressions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then now seeing more of the field and then how defenses are describing that type of defense. So he can't just at the snap make a decision and decide whether I'm going to do something and think about something pre-snap or whether I'm going to go to the snap and make a decision. And I argue that is the reason why we have more running quarterbacks in the National Football League, to be able to give themselves the opportunity to see the field in such a way to make the progressions that they need, not necessarily just to run the ball, but get to a space where they can square their shoulders and throw the ball. And we've seen that with Patrick Mahomes being a successful quarterback, see Jalen Hurts being a successful quarterback, even though he stays primarily in the pocket in terms of how he delivers the ball. We've seen the best quarterbacks in the game turn into running quarterbacks.
I'm going to say I'm sorry that we only have 3 minutes left, but should I say that I apologize?
Well, there's somebody arguing that a guy on a date didn't like that a girlfriend said sorry versus apologize.
Yeah.
I had an English teacher in high school named Mr. Sharp. If you said, I'm sorry, he said, I hate sorry people, and made it say, I apologize. So depending on what you think about it, whether sorry is sincere or maybe I apologize is sincere.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go to the example of a Kristen Cabot. Now, who is that? Well, that's the lady who was caught in the luxury box in the stadium with the CEO hugging it out. And I don't know how she apologized, but she tried to take accountability, but she also did mention that maybe she'd gotten a little lit up on a couple of high noons.
She said a couple of high nooners, Steve.
Yeah.
Listen, high noon is not that much alcohol in it. I mean, two high noons is not going to get you in a place where you're committing adultery and getting your hands wrapped around in public in a Coldplay concert. I'm sorry. I don't think that took her way off base. I think they had a little bit more nooners than that.
Yeah.
Maybe noon. Maybe 12.
Well, let's talk holidays here for a second. I spoke to a couple of UNLV football players who were both like 22, 23 years old, and I was asking them today about what they're going to do for the holidays, for Christmas. Did they buy some gifts? They both mentioned granny. And grandmas are really important. Grandparents are really important. And I saw the video you reposted up on your Threads account with Wemby, Victor Wembanyama, like really broken up about his granny. That was sad to see.
Yeah, I mean, to be that far away from your grandmother.
Yeah.
And during, I think that's number one. You don't get a chance to say goodbye to her. And then he's young, you know. So you still have those really warm memories of being a kid with your grandmother. I lost my grandmother after law school. I lost my grandfather when I was in law school, and those are challenging events for me. And so I think that grandparents are just as important as your parents. They're really, we're part of your family. My grandmother made the best stuffing in the world. She put yellow food coloring. It was really spicy. I loved her. So shout out to all the grandmothers out there during this holiday season.
All right, Xavier, we got some important stuff to cover here. We're going to go rapid fire real quick. First of all, TV shows. You watch TV shows?
Yeah, sports.
Just sports, okay. I was going to ask you who might be the bigger gangster, Barksdale from The Wire, Tony Soprano, or Madam from All the Queen's Men?
Barksdale.
God, Madam is just fierce, though. It's Christmas time. This Christmas or almost Christmas?
Oh, easily. This Christmas. Fireside is blazing bright. Caroling through the night.
That's all I needed to know.
EP, love you, buddy. Have a good holiday. We won't talk to you next week, so enjoy it, and we'll get you on in a couple weeks.
It's my birthday next Friday, too. Love you, too.
Oh, my God. Happy birthday. Love you. That. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know someone, the SO was telling me, someone that she's friends with, and I'm kind of friends with them, too, that has a birthday on Christmas Eve. I mean, just what a penalty. What a penalty to be that close to Christmas right there.
Right there.
It's rough.
Tough.
Wait, were you asking about Christmas movies this Christmas?
This Christmas or almost Christmas?
Okay. I don't know. I've probably seen both. Do you know who's in each one of them?
This Christmas is with Loretta Devine and Idris Elba, Chris Brown.
I think I've seen that one.
They all return home.
Not a big Chris Brown fan.
I would choose This Christmas also. I was going to throw in Best Man Holiday also, but This Christmas and Almost Christmas are almost identical, where they all return home. One, they're returning home to the matriarch. One, they're returning home to the patriarch.
Is that J.B. Smoove, who's in Almost Christmas? Okay.
And Delroy Lindo, I think.
Oh, Danny Glover.
Yeah. Or Danny Glover, that's it. It was Danny Glover.
Monique? Gabrielle Union?
Yeah.
I've probably seen both, but maybe I have to rewatch them. 4 o'clock hours on the way. We're going to get up to Seattle, get a preview of the Seahawks and Rams.